So today we're starting a brand new series called Frentimacy, and we're really talking about friendship. It's this idea that a lot of times friends almost seem to grow on trees when we're in our late teens or our early 20s, but at some point in life, usually around 25, 27, sometimes 23, friends get harder and harder to make and to keep and to grow deeper with. And so I just think that the scriptures are pretty clear that the concept of friendship becomes very important, like for all of our life, and our enjoyment of life will largely hinge on the richness of our friendships, especially as we get older. So we're taking this series, and we're going to be looking at some passages out of Proverbs and some passages out of the Gospels in order to ask, like, what does it look like to live into a friendship relationship as we age? So that's what we'll be doing over the next several weeks. When I was in my early 20s, I started going scuba diving. And it was my wife and I, we went on our honeymoon, and we, for the very first time, went scuba diving on our honeymoon. It was really fun. My second favorite thing we did on the honeymoon. And so then we got back, and I thought, man, this would be really fun if I had some friends that did it with me. And so I got a number of friends to go with me, and we started to get certified together. You have to go through like some pool sessions, and then you have to go through like some open water where you're in a lake or where you're in some ocean. And I had some friends, Daniel, my friend Dave, my friend Chris, my brother Caleb. We all decided to go scuba diving and get certified together. And that first lake dive, that first open water dive was just a disaster. First, my friend Daniel was a bit smaller, and they didn't have a wetsuit in his size, so they had to give him a female wetsuit. And the problem was a female wetsuit is shaped like a woman is typically shaped, and so that's the wetsuit that my friend Daniel had to wear. And then my brother Caleb, when he got in, you have to clear your ears. If you've ever gone down into a pool, like 7, 8, 10 feet down, you start to feel pressure build up inside of your ears. So the way to clear that is you hold your nose, and you gently breathe out of your nose, and you'll start to feel your ears equalize, and it gets rid of that pressure. But my brother didn't understand that he was supposed to do that really gently, so he just, with everything he had, snorted like a bull, I guess, and what he did was he blew his eardrum out. So he had to come back up. My friend Dave didn't get his weights proper. Your wetsuit makes you buoyant. It makes you float in the water. So to compensate for that, you have to have a weight belt so that when you release the air out of your air vest, it's called a BC that you wear, you'll kind of, the idea is that you gently float down, right, once the air is released. But my friend Dave put way too much weight on the weight belt because he was just totally guessing. He got in, he released the air out of his BC, and he plummeted like an asteroid to the bottom of the lake, and he hit the diving platform, bam, messed up his ankle. So like that day is coming to a close. We're all sitting in chairs afterwards. I'm looking around, right? My brother has like pus oozing out of his ear. Dave has like a wrap on his ankle because he can barely move anymore. I look over, my friend Daniel is getting out of the lake, but his female wetsuit is filled up completely with water. So now he's got breasts as he's coming out of the water. Like, it was just a disaster of a day. But you're in your 20s. And you can say, hey, let's do a crazy thing together. And it feels like all your friends are like, yeah, we're down for that, right? We're down for anything in our 20s. Then I got later in life and into my mid-20s, late 20s, into my 30s. My friends kept getting married. I got married. My friends started having kids. We started having kids. And people are less available. And so by the time I was in my early 30s, all of my dive buddies were overcommitted. And you can't go diving alone. You're not supposed to. It's not healthy to. So I lost my dive buddies. So what we decided to do was to create one. So this is my son, Jack, and he just turned 10 years old, and this was him getting scuba certified just last week. We went on our first open ocean water dive yesterday morning. We had a really awesome time. Took 10 years, but finally all this hard work and effort has paid off, okay? So what happens is you get older. The crazy friends you had when you were younger tend to have more responsibilities pile up, and it gets harder and harder to have close, meaningful, deep friendships as you get older. And so I just want for us to be able to talk about friends today and kind of answer some basic questions. So here's the whole of the content that we're going to look at today. Number one, what is a friend? All right, like what's the actual definition? You probably think you know, but can we talk about it and maybe find a common definition together? Number two, why do we not have friends, right? If friends are so great and so important, why is it that so many of us struggle to have them? And then finally, number three, how can we make friends? Look, I know that this sounds like the curriculum for a kindergarten class, right? Come on in, children, gather around. What is a friend? Johnny, what do you think a friend is, right? Like, why do we not have friends, kids? Like, how do we make them? I get it, right? I get it. And yet, here's what I know. A recent survey came out that said that 45% of Americans did not have a single close friend that they felt like they could confide in and that would confide in them. 45%. The Surgeon General of the United States of America just last month in May issued a report that said that loneliness in this country now carries with it the same level of health risk as cigarette smoking. The more lonely you are, the less likely you are to take good care of yourself, the more likely you are to have anxiety and depression. This is a real challenge and a real issue. And so we need to talk about friendships, because I know you're not a kid anymore, most of you. I see a couple of you in the crowd. Welcome, by the way. I know you're not a kid anymore, most of you. But actually, this becomes more important as we enter into our late 20s, our 30s, our 40s, and beyond. And so we need to talk a little bit about friendship. So first, our starting place, what is a friend? What is a friend? And to kind of like lay out, I think, some groundwork for what a friend actually is, I want us to look at a few passages from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is a book that's almost in the middle of the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. And it's a book that was reportedly written, largely written down by Solomon, who was David, King David's son, but probably was a collection of sayings from all over Israel. Proverbs are wisdom sayings that are generally true, okay? So they're not absolutes. You'll find some exceptions here and there, but they're wise saying, handed down wisdom. These sayings then are 2,500 plus years old. They're really, really old, and yet we find them today to be just as true and real as they were thousands of years ago. So I want to put up three passages from Proverbs as we think about friendship. This book, by the way, is loaded with important messages about the importance of friendship. So here's a few. Proverbs 17:17 says this: a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity, which is a bit of a confusing maybe way of phrasing things. So what does that mean? That means that you may have a brother or a sister, you have a sibling, right? And your family. So you love each other, and you're there for each other when you're facing adversity. But just because you love each other, it does not mean you like each other. You may have a brother or sister that you happen to be very close with and maybe share a lot in common with. But for many of us, we may have brothers and sisters that we love them. We're there for them if they need us. They face adversity. We're one of the first phone calls. But we don't hang out a lot. You know, we don't consider each other a great hang. We don't have a lot in common. And that's okay. You don't have to spend tons of times with your siblings to actually love them. But what the author is saying here is that, look, a friend loves at all times. At all times. A brother is there in adversity. They'll be there for adversity. But a friend is not just family. A friend is someone who chose you and you chose them. So they are there always. That's the beauty of friendship. Proverbs 18:24. There are quote unquote friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. How many of you have had a friend in your life that you thought you were really close only to find out that the things they say about you to other people do not line up with the things they say to you? I'm not asking you for you to raise your hands. This is a rhetorical question. I don't need to be like, everybody who's been betrayed, raise it. Like, okay, just hang. But how many of you had some kind of experience like that? Someone you thought was a friend, you thought was there for you, only to find out that they spoke differently to other people about you than to you. I've certainly experienced that before. And it is brutal. It is brutal for someone who you think is close and a friend and someone you can trust to act in a different way when you're not around. So there are a type of friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. A real friend is there always. A real friend has your back. Proverbs 27, verses 5, 6, and 17. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. This is very wise, by the way, just to keep reading this. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. All right, there is a way that a friend might wound you by telling you a truth about your life that is uncomfortable to you. All right, a friend might wound you by being honest with you. But if they're a true friend, they'll do it out of love. It's to help you, right? So it says, like, wounds from a friend can be trusted. Like, it's a wound, but it's a trustworthy wound. But an enemy multiplies kisses. In other words, you will have people that are your enemies that still try to suck up to you. You have people who are like, oh, I just, right? But it's not real. And that kind of stuff is worth less, way less than a wound that's given to you from a friend. Why? Well, because as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. There is a way in which a friend is supposed to fully embrace you, but also to act a bit like sandpaper in your life. They let you know that you're fully known and fully loved, but also you're not perfect. There are some things that are concerning that you need to work on. And so as we look through these passages, just a few things pop out for me that I think really separate true friendship from something different, okay? Here's the first one. A friend is persistent. A friend is persistent. They do not give up on you when the chips are down. They don't walk away when being your friend becomes inconvenient. That's how to tell a real friend. There's a wonderful book that just came out recently. Anyone who's over the age of 40, I would recommend you read it. It's that good. And it talks about how to move from the first half of life to the second half of life, because we're good at different things in those two halves. And one of the things it talks about is friendship. The book is by an author named Arthur C. Brooks, and it's called From Strength to Strength. Arthur C. Brooks, From Strength to Strength. I'll use a quote of his later in the message today. But one of the stories that Brooks tells his audience is that he was on a phone call, and his son Carlos overheard him on the call. He ended the call, and his son said, "Hey, Dad, who are you talking to?" And he said, "I was talking to a friend." And Carlos responded, "A real friend or a deal friend?" Because his son, at a very early age, he picked up on the fact that there are friends you have that you know what's going on in their life, and they know what's going on in yours. And there are other friends you have because it's convenient to be a work associate or colleague with them, right? Most of the people in your life are deal friends to you. Most of the people in your life, they're friendly toward you. They're your friend. But there are people who are largely friendly with you because of the benefits that your friendship provides their life with. So it's people at work, it's your colleagues, it's your associates. Maybe they're friends with you because you can get them a great deal on bulk paper. You know, that might be the reason that they're friends with you. Or they're friends with you because they can get you half off of scuba gear. Or they're friends with you because, you know, like you have a shared network and you can connect people and they can connect people and that becomes convenient. It doesn't mean that they don't like you. But they're not a real friend, they're a deal friend. And once your career changes, or you change companies, or you retire, your deal friends disappear. It's your real friends that are persistent. When you have a tragedy in your life, you get sick, your spouse gets sick, your kids get sick, you get laid off. When you have a tragedy in your life, a crisis, your real friends stick around even though it's inconvenient. Your real friends are the ones who show up at your house and they ask how they can help. And when you say, "I don't know," they just start doing random crap to try and help anyway, right? "I am going to try to take a burden off of you even if it kills both of us." That's a real friend. A real friend is persistent. Your deal friends are the ones who find out that something happened in your life and that's a shame. They hate that something bad happened to you, but they say, "Hey, call me if you need anything." And they may mean it, but they're not going to go looking for opportunities to make your life easier right now. "Call me if you need anything" says, like, you're in a specific category of friend. I do care about you, but I don't have time to be there for you as persistently as a real friend would. Now, look, we don't have 20, 30, 40 real friends. Like a really good life is a life where you have 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe really, really close friends. You just can't possibly be persistent in every relationship that you have with people. That's not possible. But you need to understand that there are real friends and there are deal friends. And part of the difference is that a real friend is persistent. Also, a real friend is truthful. They're honest with you about things, right? When they see something that's not going well in your life, they have the intestinal fortitude to name it. Lots of us, by the way, won't share a hard thing with a friend. And we'll tell other people it's because we don't want to make them feel bad. But the reality is, we don't do it because we don't want us to feel bad. Having a hard, truthful conversation with someone is the worst. You're anxious leading up to it. You feel terrible going into it. You're afraid you're going to put it the wrong way, say the wrong thing. It's terrible. But if a friend really, really loves you, they will be truthful about areas of your life that are concerning to them, or that they see that they can be helpful in, or that you need to shift or change. And your real friends will do that for you, and you will do it for them. Because a real friend is persistent, and a real friend is truthful. It's why, right? Like, it's an open rebuke. It's wounds from a friend that can be trusted. It's iron sharpening iron. Real friends embrace one another, but they also act as a kind of sandpaper. And I would say this, what we read all throughout the Proverbs is, you will not fully become the person God wants you to be without real friends in your life to sharpen you. You were never meant to do this alone. You were meant to do it with other people. And so if we like miss out on the friendships, like, you'll never become as great as you can be. You'll never become as Christ-like as you can be. You'll never become as helpful as you can be without friends in your life to push back on you sometimes and to call things out on you. Like, that's what they're there for. They're truthful. A real friend is vulnerable. They can be truthful with you about you because they've been truthful with you about them. There's a vulnerability there that gives permission to name things that they see. A few years ago, I had a friend of mine who was exhibiting some behavior that I had done this before. And so I, by the way, the situations of this have been left intentionally vague in order to protect the guilty. All right, so a friend of mine was walking through some things that I had walked through before. And I was able to say, hey, listen, my starting place wasn't, I'm concerned about you doing these things. My starting place was, I did this. Here was the result. And if you keep doing it, if you keep persisting, let me tell you where this ends. Please change. Please change the approach. Please change the way you're doing that. All right, I was able to be truthful with them because of my vulnerability. And people have been able to be truthful with me because of their vulnerability. Some of the best advice I've received is from friends who were willing to name their own missteps and miscues in their life so that they could prevent me from doing the same. It's that vulnerability that matters, right? Real friends are persistent, they're truthful, and they're vulnerable. So here's what I would invite you to do. Think about the people who you call friend in your life. Is this what your friendship looks like for them? Do you have relationships that are persistent and truthful and vulnerable? Do you have relationships with people who will let you in and will not let you down? Does that mark your friendships? Can you name one or two or three people that that's what your friendship looks like? And see, my encouragement is I know for a fact, lots of us don't have this. I know for a fact, especially men tend to struggle the most, just statistically speaking, as they get older, in having real friends and not just deal friends. And so my encouragement to you would be that you really seek out real friendships. So that's what a friend is. But why do we not have friends? It's a great question. A couple of answers for that. One of them has subpoints. I can tell you're excited. All right, so here's the first one. One reason we don't have friends, well, first of all, the reason you specifically don't have friends, I don't know exactly, right? Maybe you're a jerk. I don't know for sure. That may be why you specifically don't have friends. I don't know. But I know that there are lots of reasons that, generally speaking, we may not have friends, and some of these things are not really fully in our control. So here's the first one. Number one, we live in a friend-resistant culture. We live in a friend-resistant culture. Let me just name a few reasons why. First of all, our culture is highly individualistic, and we're highly capitalistic. So we are always measuring things here in the United States in terms of what our return on our investment will be. If I put an hour of my life into this, what's the return I'm going to get out of it, right? Some of you who are more entrepreneurially minded, you've made entire careers off of constantly thinking about the ROI of something. If I put money in that, if I put time into that, what's going to be the return on that? Here's the problem with friendships. It's impossible to judge the ROI on an hour spent in a dinner conversation with friends. Like, you just can't measure it. And so it's easy to just forsake it or just to totally leave it out. So with this great quote from Arthur C. Brooks, he says this: successful people are good at marginal thinking, making sure each hour is spent on its best use at that moment. Many of you here, by the way, I know because I've met you, we've had conversations. Many of you here are high-level capable leaders. Many of you here are successful. You're entrepreneurs who started a business, or you're a high-level manager in your company, or some of you are just starting out your career, but you're on the fast track. We have a lot of wonderful thinkers and leaders here in this congregation. And for many of you, you're great at marginal thinking. You make sure each hour is spent in its most optimal use, right? Here's the problem. The trouble is that this always marginalizes the things in life that don't have a clear payoff in the short run, like relationships. And if I spend an extra hour at work, it's easy for me to measure what that hour will give me in return. But if I leave work on time to go meet some friends for dinner, well, I mean, one dinner is not going to make or break a friendship. It's easy to just skip out, to choose not to do it. But see, it's years of dinners that make and break friendship. It's years of dinners that build the kind of trust and persistence and truthfulness and vulnerability that allow us to have rich levels of relationship when we're older. It's not an immediate ROI. That's the challenging thing about it. In a society like ours, that makes friend culture, that makes us resistant to having friendships. And number two, under this bullet point, mobility. People move away. People move away. So as much time as it takes to invest into people and actually call them friends, then we're such a mobile society that people often leave, right? Your friends who come up to you and they've lived in Southern California their whole life and like, well, we're moving to Tennessee. And of course, your first question is, have you been to Tennessee in July before? Have you ever done that to yourself? And they say, no, but we've read about it and I'm sure it's fine. Good luck with that, right? So you have friends who move off, all right? And that's part of it. Friends come and friends go. People move in, people move out. But it does make building friendships difficult. And it's one of the reasons that our society, you realize until about the 1500s or 1600s, most people were born, they lived, and they died on about 1,000 acres of land. That was it, total. Maybe once or twice in their life they took a pilgrimage somewhere and came back, but that was where they were. That is not society anymore. And part of what mobility has done for us, right, it's given us tons of options, like freedom, yes, freedom, individualism, capitalism, we're all for it here in the U.S. It's given us a ton of options, but it's been death to some of our friendships and our relationships. Mobility makes it really, really tough. A third one, busyness. We're just so busy. All of us are completely scheduled out the wazoo. And we had this like little break from busyness during COVID, right? Where we're like all of us, and I remember seeing all these YouTube videos and TikTok videos the first few weeks of COVID. It was like, maybe we're finally gonna learn what it means to slow down and live life at a reasonable pace. And then everything shut down for months and we all went crazy, right? And then it opened up and we're like, I gotta make up for 2 years of not doing anything. And we just went and we went and we went and our calendars got filled up almost immediately. COVID taught us nothing. Except that we don't like being bored. So we refilled the calendar completely, right? Now, have you tried to make dinner plans with someone recently? You call them up and you're like, hey, what are you doing next Thursday? What about next month? What about October? How about fall of 2028, right? It is almost impossible to get there. I even heard a comedian a couple weeks ago, Nate Bargatze, talk about how it's just so much easier in your 20s. But you get older and your schedule changes and you get more responsibilities and things change, right? In your 20s, people call you up. And it's like, hey, are you going? And you're like, yeah, I'm going. You don't even know where you're going, right? Yeah, what do you want me to do? I'll move to go, right? Like, I'll burn this apartment down right now. What do we need to do, right? Like, that's your 20s. Get in your 30s, and it's like, where are we going? How many people are going to be there? Is it loud? I am going to drive separately, right? You just change. You get in your 40s, and it's like, I'm not going. I'm mad that you thought I would go, right? Like, it's just, like, it just changes. We get busier and busier and busier, and we cut out our ability to give the space that friendship takes. It takes space. There's no way to hotwire it and make it go super fast. So we have this friend-resistant culture because of ROI, because of mobility, because of business, because of social media. I have like 7,000 Facebook friends. I know like 8 of them personally, okay? Like we have all, what a friend has become someone who has heard your name at some point in your life, right? And sent you a friend request. That's what a friend is these days. And so because we have all these friends, we think that all of our friend slots are full. Like that's easy to convince ourselves of that. And yet we've never been lonelier. It's a fascinating dichotomy at play there. Cultural values. Like we live in a friend-resistant culture because of cultural values. Different cultures have different values. Cultures that are very conservative or traditional, they put a high value on family. Cultures that are very like socialistic, right? Socialistic societies, they put a very high value on civic relationships, neighbors, relationships with civic officers, that kind of thing. Cultures that are more like ours, our culture tends to be much more individualistic and much more liberal. Cultures like ours then, we tend to put a high emphasis on romantic relationships. That becomes the most important thing to us. So if you were to take a list of all the songs about romance here in the U.S. that have been on the top 40 in the last decade, and all the songs about friendship, there's almost nothing in the friendship category, right? We're always talking about romance, and oh, you fill my heart up, and you complete me, and nobody puts baby in a corner, right? Like, we're just constantly on to the romance thing. It's why when you go to the checkout line at the grocery store, and you have all these magazines, right, with all these headlines, like these gossip magazines, what's it always about? It's about who's sleeping with who, who's dating who. You wouldn't be able to sell a magazine that talked about, you know, who Zendaya's best friend was this week or who Taylor Swift is having coffee with. But you want to talk about who Zendaya's sleeping with or who Taylor Swift's new boyfriend is? Oh, we're selling out of copies. We can't keep them in stock, right? We're obsessed with romantic relationships in this type of a culture and society. And the reality is there is no culture on earth that puts friendship as the top highest priority. It always is on the back burner. Why is that? Pastor Tim Keller says this about this. Every culture always put friendship in the back seat. Why? Because it's not a biological or sociological necessity. So we put it in the back seat. And yet we know for sure that as you get older, if you do so without friendship, your life will be far less rich, which means we need to make the time for it now, and yet we live in a society that is a friend-resistant culture and society. Okay, so that's one reason that you don't have friends. Why? What's another one? Another reason you don't have friends is that we're not good friends ourselves. When I talked earlier about how a true friend is persistent and truthful and vulnerable, probably you felt a couple things. One of the things you may have felt is a longing for that in your own life, right? Man, I need that kind of friendship. I want that. But the other thing you may have felt is a bit of shame that you're not that for someone else. Our friends are typically only as good as we are friends to them. And so for many of us, like we want someone to be our really good friend, but we ourselves do not want to make the time and the sacrifice in order to be that good friend to them. And so for many of us, like we're not good friends ourselves, and it's a big reason why we don't have friends. Okay, so that's what a friend is. That's why you don't have any. How can we make friends? It's a great question. It's a really great. How can we make friends? All right, so I have a few suggestions today that I hope are helpful. Because I just recognize in a room this size with an audience both online and here in person, like there are many of you within the sound of my voice that you have a lot of deal friends, but you may not have any real friends. So what does it look like to make friends? Especially as you get older, right? Because it's different than when it was my first day of kindergarten. I went to the monkey bars because that's where the action was, okay? So my first day of kindergarten, I went to the monkey bars. I was there and a person who became a friend was there. His name is Zach. And so I saw him and I said, hey, my name is Josh. And he said, my name is Zach. And then he said, you want to be friends? And I said, sure. And we were great friends through the rest of high school, okay? Like that's how easy it was then. But we're older now, and it's not that easy. If you were to go up to someone at Starbucks this week and say, my name is Josh, can we be friends? They would probably call 911, okay? So you got to change your approach as you get a little bit older. So here's one of the things, just a helpful pointer, I hope. You got to make space for discovery. You have to make space in your life for the discovery of friendships. And that involves two things. First of all, you have to stay interesting and curious as you get older. Some of us are in trouble already, I know, okay? As you get older, you need to have some hobbies or some things that you care about. It can't just be work. If work is your entire identity as you get older. Look, for those of us who have had some success in our lives and in our vocation, I know it's easy to become defined by your work. I know that that's super easy. Here's one of the reasons I know that. If you'd asked me back in 2019 if I defined myself as being a pastor, I would have said no. And then we got into 2020, and we weren't able to gather like this for a long time, and I got depressed. I really struggled, and I found out, I am getting more of my identity from my vocation than I realized. And my guess is many of us are in the same boat. You need to keep having hobbies, and you need to keep having things that you're interested in beyond just your work as you get older, or the only friends you will make are deal friends. So you need that space for discovery. Here's how C.S. Lewis put it, wise Christian author writing shortly after World War II, okay? He says, this is why those pathetic people, time out, let me say, when he says pathetic, he means literally people who are worthy of our sympathy. He does not mean losers, okay? He's not running for president. Okay, so that is why those pathetic people who simply want friends can never make any. The very condition of having friends is that we should want something else besides friends. All right, he's going to go on. This is a really important quote, okay? This is how he finishes this. He says, friendship must be about something, even if it were only an enthusiasm for dominoes or white mice. How many, by the way, just by show of hands, how many white mice enthusiasts do we have in the room? Not a lot? What a weird thing to say, okay? Love this quote. I just think he had a weird friend and he like inserted his friend's thing in here. Okay, so it's got to be about something. White mice, dominoes, you know the deal. Those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. Like there has to be a starting place, right? When I was 5, the starting place was monkey bars. You get older and maybe it's scuba diving, maybe it's vintage cars. It can be any number of things, but there has to be a starting place for the friendship. We have something in common. There may be lots that we don't have in common, but we have something in common, some kind of starting place. And so you need, right, to make space for discovery of things that interest and make you curious, and for discovery of people who share that interest with you. And where is that going to be? Lots of possible places there. We'll come back to that in just a little bit. You got to make space for discovery. Number two, make time for investing. Look it, this takes time. There's no shortcut. I'm sad to say. I love life hacks, by the way. Things that you can just like, you figure out a solution. It's like you get in there and like you get it done way faster than you thought. There's no way to life hack this. I'm 41 years old to this day. The best friends I have in my life are friends that I've known for over 10, 15, some of them 20 years. There's just no replacement for that. You know, we moved to California about 4 years ago, and we've started to make some good friendships here. But they're not nearly as close as those we've had a couple decades with. Why? Because we haven't had a couple decades with them yet. We're working on it. But it just takes time. Arthur C. Brooks says this in his book, From Strength to Strength. Again, if you're over 40, buy this book, From Strength to Strength, by Arthur C. Brooks. It's just incredible. He says this, love and friendships are enormously time-consuming. It's true. They crowd out all kinds of other things, like, well, let's be honest. For many readers of this book, they mostly crowd out work. He's just naming it. For many of us, when we're in kind of the peak of our career powers, we're going to be tempted to spend all of our spare time doing that because it's the thing we're good at, the thing we feel good, the thing we feel most comfortable with. But if you are going to make time for deep, rich friendships, that really needs to start now and not sometime way, way, way later. It takes time. So you have to make time for investing. Third one, draw strength from Jesus. Everything here at Versity Church really begins and ends with Jesus for us. And I just think that if you're a follower of Christ, your strength for finding new friendships, leaning into them, forging them, building on the foundation of them, you're going to find that in Jesus Christ. I love this passage in John chapter 15. Jesus is speaking to his disciples and he says this, "This is my commandment, love each other in the same way that I have loved you." Quite a high calling, by the way. "There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." And he goes on, "You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves, but now you are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me." In other words, like, look, you were a slave to the Lord, and therefore you were like a slave to me. Like, you followed me because you thought you were supposed to follow me, but you need to know, like, you're a friend at this point. Like, I have told you everything I know. I've been vulnerable with you. I've told you the truth. I've been persistent with you over these years. I call you all friends now, and I love this next verse. "You didn't choose me. I chose you." And he goes on, because this is the same section, chapters 15 through 17, where he begins to pray a prayer for all of those who will come after these disciples. That just as Jesus is in the Father, and just as these disciples of his have been in him and been his friends, that those who would follow after him, after them, would also be in Jesus. In other words, Christ is calling all of us into friendship. We didn't choose him. He chose us. And that's what made the friendship possible. So just a few takeaways from this that I think are so important as we think about the grounding of friendship. First of all, Jesus calls you friend. The creator and the sustainer of the universe, he calls you friend. He gave his life so that you could have personal relationship and friendship with him. He calls you friend, which means this: you are fully known by Jesus. There's nothing about you he doesn't know. And you are fully loved by Jesus. That even knowing everything about you, all the stuff that you hide from others, all the stuff you pretend doesn't exist, even the stuff you lie to yourself about, he knows it all. And he still loves you. And the reason this is such grounding then for other friends in our lives is because it takes risk to go out and to make new friendships. It takes risk to be vulnerable with someone to such a degree that they then will like be vulnerable back to you. It takes risk to be a great friend and therefore to make great friends. But if you know at the start of a friendship that you don't get all your value from the way that others see you, you get your value because of who Jesus says that you are, then you can be vulnerable and you can take risks. And even if someone gets to know you and they choose to reject you, you don't lose all of your sense of self-worth because you never got all of it from them anyway. That's the beauty of friendship. And that's the beauty of friendships with a Christ-centered starting place and foundation. Look, make space for discovery, make time for investing, draw strength from Jesus. I just want to mention one thing about your church family then. Whether you're new here at Versity Church or you've been here for a while, one of the important things you need to know is that this is a community of people. And the thing we have in common here is that we put Jesus at the center of our lives. We don't all do that perfectly, of course. None of us do that perfectly. But we, day by day, try and do it increasingly. And so one of the beautiful things about a church community is that if you aren't sure where to find other people, you can find them here. It's one of the reasons that we have groups that meet all throughout the year. We meet in trimesters, right? So we have a winter trimester, which, you know, whatever version of winter we have here in Southern California. We have a summer trimester and we have a fall trimester. And all of these last about 10 weeks. And we've even introduced the concept of activity groups. This is groups of people who can have like a shared affinity for something and they can do it together. Do you know that recently in the UK, they appointed a loneliness minister? Because of how lonely the average Great Briton is these days. And one of the things that this loneliness minister has found is that if they can create spaces of shared activity, people are more likely to make friends. When my children were very young, they were like 2 years old, we would get together with other families that had young children and we would create play dates. So the way that worked is that the family would come over and they would bring their two-year-old and we'd put our two-year-olds in the same room together and the adults all talked about, you know, how terrible it was to parent two-year-olds because it's really exhausting. And then the kids would play, not together, They would play in parallel to one another. They call it parallel play, right? So Jack, at 2 years old, he has his Winnie the Pooh doll, and we invite Aiden over, and Aiden's got his like T-Rex toy, and they're just playing parallel to one another because they don't yet have the linguistic skills to sit down and contemplate the meaning of life together, okay? So just playing with their Pooh Bear and with their T-Rex. And later, that became the foundation for greater friendship as they were able to start talking to each other and actually play together and share like conversation together. It was a beautiful kind of thing. Here's what they found in the UK. Men who are approaching retirement age and are about to lose all of their deal friends and don't really have any real friends need, just like a two-year-old, to go into a space and have parallel play. So they've created like wood shops, for instance, that retired men like can go to, and they can start to do woodworking because that's something that interests them. And there's other men there that have been doing it longer. And at first, you're just doing it separately, parallel, right? Like, give me some space here. I don't want to like have a deep conversation with anybody. And then after a while, you'll have a question about how to do something or cut something or connect something. And someone who's been doing it a while will come over and help. And then you'll start to meet each other and learn a little bit about each other. And eventually, a friendship can blossom. This is the kind of thing that we've tried to do with activity groups here. Get around a common interest. And we don't yet have a white mice enthusiast group, but we're looking to maybe add that in the fall if we get a lot of feedback that would be helpful. But we have numbers of other groups of shared common interests. Will you become best friends with everybody in that group? No! You don't need 12 best friends or 20 best friends. You need one or two or three. So as you're thinking about making space for discovery and making time for investment and drawing strength from Jesus, I just want to encourage you to consider your church home a valuable resource, because here's the beauty of meeting people here that are also pursuing Jesus. You need something in common to bond you together. And when Jesus bonds you together, you can have all these other differences. You do not want to be best friends with someone who's exactly like you. You will drive each other crazy, okay? You want someone that you have some shared with and you have some differences with. That's how iron sharpens iron. And here's what I found over the years. Some of my best friends are people that we have totally different backgrounds, personalities, socioeconomic realities, ethnic realities, all that kind of, we're totally different. We have the cross of Christ and his resurrection in common as our starting place. And then because we have all these other differences, we've been able to like make each other better in so many helpful ways over the years. And I'm so very grateful for it. And that's the kind of friendship I long for you to have. And that's the kind of friendship that Proverbs and Jesus long for us to have as well. We are not people who only need a relationship with God and nobody else. We are people who are built for relationship with God and relationship with others. And if one of those two is missing, we will always feel like we are missing out, because that's how we were designed. And that's the design I'm inviting you to step into. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the time together today. Lord, thank you that you've called us friend. God, thank you so much that you have shown a light in our lives through Jesus. And thank you so much that you have shown us what a real friend is through Christ, through his disciples, through your scripture. And I pray, God, that you would just give us the wisdom to carve out the space in our life that we need in order to like really pour into other people and have those people pour into us. Thank you for the beauty of friendship and the beauty of these relationships, Lord. We're just so grateful for them. Thank you for making us relational creatures and getting to enjoy both relationship with you and with one another. It's in Jesus' name we ask these things, and thank you for these things. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Verve City Church Weekly Messages podcast. To learn more about Verve City Church, including info about our church ministries and ways to get involved, visit vervecity.church. To stay up to date with our weekly messages, make sure you subscribe and leave a review so others can find our messages of hope and encouragement. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next week.